You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kibalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. In the summer of 2019, months before the COVID pandemic would fuel a massive expansion of podcast availability, an eventual acceptance of this medium even from the most conservative religious circles, the Yeshiva of Newark launched its platform, fusing an enlightened series of shiurim and contemporary topics presented uncompromisingly with serious interviews and dialogue with important figures in education, psychology, and mystical thought. The result shone important shafts of light on hitherto unnoticed problems and suggesting real solutions. During the global shutdown of in-person learning options and forced quarantines, hundreds of searchers across multiple time zones joined our Zoom live events every afternoon and evening. Sophisticated classes described the fundamentals of Talmud learning for adults who had been underserved. Scholarly old hands joined Shiurim and Yerushalmi and Daf Yomi. We were at the forefront of producing Hespedim for so many stalwarts of Torah and Avoda who passed away during the height of the Magefa. These presentations brought comfort and appreciation to the bereaved of our people. The platform routinely chimed in on the relevant issues and upsetting scandals of the day from a rabbinic perspective. We even offered options for healthy, life-affirming entertainment in a world bowled over by streaming services. With downloads approaching the million mark and an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe that a niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top yeshiva podcasts. This proud edifice I've described is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record and edit, to promote the product that has been a balm, an instructor to so many. Just $36 as a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a new arc of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this arc till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of B'loi Ha'aretz Deya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen.
So, this is a shiur that was given 6 years ago, Le'ili Nishmas, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Pupko, Zochreinu Livracha. It is called Navigating the Shushan Triangle. It deals with the relationship between Mordechai and Esther and Ahasuerus. After Esther is taken, originally, and she submits to Ahasuerus, according to Chazal, she's also continuing a relationship with Mordechai. And what is the implications of that? Now, the shiur starts out with a number of points in the psukim, and you can hear the pushback that the people who are listening to the shiur gave me. I also referenced that I had been ill for a couple of weeks before that, and perhaps that was also influencing a lot of the strength that I was showing in the shiur, in other words, the lack of it. Anyway, I think that it's still a fascinating subject to contemplate, especially as we ready ourselves for Purim this time. Hope you enjoy it.
Shmuel Mordechai ben Yoyer ben Shimi ben Kish ish yimini. Asher ha-glom Yerushalayim, im ha-greil asher ha-glosso, im yichon yamelech Yudah, asher ha-glo nebuchadnezzar melech Babel. Okay, so that's Mordechai's background. But then tells us, vahi omein es hadasa. Omein means to nurse, right? It means to be like, from the word emuna, just like a nurse and a mother. There's no greater connection, right? Because a nursemaid will always, she feels the milk inside. The cry gets her body activated. She's emotionally and physically connected to her ward. That's the pasuk here, Vayi Omein Es Hadassah. That he had that relationship with this woman. He Esther, Bas Dodo. Okay. So Bas Dodo would seem to mean that she and Esther, he, Esther and her, were first cousins. Okay? Ki ein lo avei, she had no parents. Vanara yifas toar v'toivas mare, and she was beautiful. Again, what this means exactly, how the beauty is, again, whether it's a beautiful face, a beautiful body, a beautiful form, take it. You know, when you see someone good looking, you know they're good looking, okay? So Esther clearly was beautiful in that way. Ubamos avia v'ima, lakha Mordechai lo lavas. Mordechai took her, seemingly, as a daughter. Now, Chazal, the Gemara Megillah says that this really means lakha lo labayas. Then Mordechai married her. And Mordechai lived with her. But she wasn't just a cousin that he had Rachmanis on. And if you take a look at Chazal, and this again would be the type of question Rabbi Pukka would ask and my other Rebbeim would ask, it really doesn't put Mordechai in such a great light, this Chazal. Because it says, why did he take her as a wife? Because it says, Va'anara yifas tor v'tevas mara, she was beautiful. And therefore, Ubamos Avia, right? Again, it could have just said, the humanist, it doesn't need to tell us how beautiful she is in this pasuk. If the purpose of the pasuk Hili is to tell us that he took care of Esther, it should say, the humanist Hadassa, Bas Dodo ki ein la'ave, v'locha le'lebas. And then it could tell us afterwards that she was beautiful, which explains why Hashem was taken by Achash. No, it doesn't. Look at the pasuk. Again, I can bold the pasuk, I can make it larger. Let me, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to print it, and this way, once I print it, I can actually bold it. So let me print this, and now once it's printed, it could actually become larger, and you can see what I mean. Okay, so let's make it larger. Okay, can you see? The omenes hadasa, ki ein la'ave'ev. That's where it should say, Vayila Labas. Right? Why does it say Vanar Yafas Tovas Mari?
It says it was
right, so but
he took her in because her mother.
Right, but that would have been here. Ki Ain La Ava Aim Vilochai Labas. That's where it should say he had Rachmanis on her and married her. It shouldn't
maybe he didn't have Rachmanis on her. He married her because she was pretty. What's the problem? But what's the problem with that?
He took her.
I didn't say there was a problem with it. What? Okay, but again, all right, but right, but that, the place to have done that is here. The Ayman is Adasa, right? The Ein La'ava Aim, and he took her as a wife, and it happens to be, you should know, reader, for the rest of the story, she was very beautiful. But it tells us about her beauty before it tells us that Mordechai married her.
It could also be saying she was spiritually beautiful.
Okay, good. I'm just saying that it opens up a little bit of a thought process. If there's an answer, there's an answer. But again, without Chazal's Messiah, you would say, hey, I better take care of this girl because I know what it's like to have a pretty daughter. I know. So it could be you have a pretty daughter, you want to take care of her and be like an older cousin.
But that's essential to the whole Megillah. Chazal, we're agreeing.
But that idea, the way Chazal presented, that this is one of the sources that she was married to Mordechai, so this is one of the sources that indicates that the marriage was at least partially based on beauty.
What's the problem?
Nothing. But it makes you think about what their relationship was. Okay? The other, let's go to Perek Gimel. And Perek Gimel is, one second, at the end of Perek Beis. At the end of Perek Beis, you can see here also, let's see if we can get into larger. Okay, we know that Ahasuerus takes her, and Chazal tell us something incredible. Chazal tell us that Ein Esther Mageres Melanato Vesamo, Kasher Tziva Lev Mordechai, Vesmaimer Mordechai Esther Oso, Kasher Hoysa Vomna Ito. Chazal then tell us that we have this. The pasuk in the pasuk is that Esther is not telling her who she is, and she's remembering the lessons of Mordechai. And Mordechai, of course, is watching out for her. Chazal tell us that what does this Maimer Mordechai Esther Osa means? That she was actually that she actually, the Chazal say she was Teveles, May she Yosheves Pechekai Shalach Hashereish, the Teveles, the Acherkach Yosheves Pechekai Shalmordchai. So Chazal tell us that she actually did, she was, what does it mean, Ba'omne Ito? That she kept that relationship. Chazal set up the idea that they had a conjugal relationship. And then Chazal go further to say that she kept that conjugal relationship even when she'd already been made queen and she was living in the palace. Chazal insert that into the words here, Kasher Hoysa Ba'omne Ito, because Omein isn't so much I'm taking care of you as a little child. It's also the relationship of husband and wife. And Chazal say it very clearly that she was Toiveles, that she would live, she would be in the Chek of Achashverosh, the embrace of Achashverosh. Then she would go to the mikveh and go into the embrace of Mordechai. Again, so what are Chazal telling us? Chazal seemed to be saying that Esther was kept up this relationship. Chazal, you say, you're right, it's a remez. But Chazal wants us to know that it isn't just an interesting curiosity of the fact of Esther, but it's actually something she was clear to her, she had to keep that relationship. Which means a lot of strange things. We know that when she lived with Achashverosh, she was living with a non-Jew, right? And yet, she continued living with a Jew afterwards, her husband.
As long as he wasn't a Kohen, it's okay. Huh?
You're right, because he wasn't a Goy. So David's saying she was an Ones. But again, the fact is that, in fact, Perek Dalet of the Megillah, we find another Pasuk, the Chazal, and this is a very famous one. So this is the most essential dynamic between Mordechai and Esther in the Megillah. I'm going to just make it larger. I'm pressing print so I can make it as large as possible. Okay. As we know, this is where Mordechai and Esther clash. Up until now, Esther has been sort of Mordechai's spy. She's doing what Mordechai said. But we know the years that have passed, however long it's been, she's become a little more comfortable in this role. And when Mordechai hears about the plot against the Jews, Mordechai creates a citywide tshuva movement, or at least that everybody should realize terror is happening. He dresses in a very extreme fashion, and this seems to be replicated wherever Jews are. Vatavona naris Esther v'sariseva yagidulov v'tischalchal amalka ma'od. The girls that helped Esther out heard about this. Look at this language. Esther was mischalchal hamalka ma'od. She was completely moved to the point that she was almost became ill. There's a number of opinions in the Medrash. Some say, of course, that she actually miscarried at that point. And there's a question as to who the miscarriage was. It might have been, was it Mordechai's child? Was it Haman's child? Tosis actually asked the question. Achashverosh's child. Tosis actually asked the question, how could Esther, you want to say it's an ones, but Esther is violating one of the cardinal principles of Judaism, which is we want to keep patrimony clear. And that's why when a woman divorces or a woman becomes a widow, she needs to wait a number of months. So Tosis says, you're right, David, there was an ones. But living with Mordechai creates the possibility that we're not going to know who the child is if she becomes pregnant, right? And it might be, well, the child will be Jewish no matter what, but the child is either a Mordechai son or an Achashverosh son. So Chazal actually tell, interestingly, that she actually was pregnant at the time, and but the Schalcha Amalcha Ma'od means she actually, I've lived through it, so I can tell you I haven't actually had the miscarriage, but I've lived with women who have had, my wife, a number of miscarriages, so I can tell you that it's a very terrible thing when it occurs. It is a shocking, overwhelming, almost, it is a painful, intimate thing. And Chazal are telling us that that's what the Torah, the Pasuk is hinting to. Okay, so she's lost the child. But she's motivated to say, Mordechai, what are you doing?
This is also as a result of Mordechai wearing sack v'efer.
In other words, there's a tragedy on the right, David. Right. There's a tragedy. No, Mordechai wouldn't be doing this. Something terrible has happened, and that's affected Esther on an organic level. Okay? So Mordechai sends through Hasoch the story. This is the first time, by the way, we have a dialogue between these two heroes. And it happens through a third party. This is the first time they're talking together. We've heard about them, but as I've told you a number of times, I've had my students, and you know what I'm talking about. I didn't get this from Rabbi Pupko. It's really an idea that I developed on my own, which maybe he helped me think in that fashion. That where the Torah, the Nevi'im, the Ksuvim, gives us dialogue, that dialogue is crucial. It tells us a lot about the relationship. Torah, any sefer can be written in narrative. You could have a third person write any sefer, and it would basically do the same. We're not going to get all the dialogue the characters have anyway. So whatever dialogue the author decides is worthy of inserting tells us something about the essence of that character. I hope I'm making myself clear about that. Again, whether it's Moshe, whether it's Avraham Avinu, whether it's Sari Meno, the Torah zeroes in on snippets of dialogue, and it actually tells us the words they said. This is the first time, although we know that there's a background between them, that Torah actually tells us their discussion. So here it is.
I understand, though, why did she have such an extreme reaction just to him wearing sackcloth? Like, I mean, could have been any number of things.
And I think also because of his screaming, Yizak Zoka Gedol Umara. Right, it was the sackcloth, and also it was the fact that that was prefaced by a complete overwhelming state of mourning.
Something had to be going on.
So something's happening, which of course Esther feels for Klal Yisrael, right? And that's why when you're upset, to the ultimate. What does she say? She says, "Okay, so here's the first words of Mordechai. First, Esther says to Mordechai, "Kol abdi amelach v'amedinas amelach yodim asher kol ish v'isha asher yovel al amelach el chotzer apnimis asher lo yikorei ochis dosa lahomis." In other words, you want me, basically, what did Mordechai want? Mordechai wanted her to go to Achashverosh. What does that mean? Let's be frank. What does that mean? To be ready to sleep with him again. To actually willfully go in to sleep with him in order to curry his favor. Because men will do almost anything when you've got them in a sensual way. And Mordechai knows that. Mordechai needs something crucial from Achashverosh, and he tells Esther she must do it. Right? What is Esther's answer? Esther's answer is, "I can't do that, because the truth is, as much as he loves me, there's a hierarchy here. And if I go without permission, anybody goes without permission to his private chambers, wherever he is, he gets killed." Now, it's true, the melech might decide, "Well, I like this person. But, you know what, I'm taking a risk." Again, we talk about the way they live there. Going into the king without, you talk about a male-dominated society, right? He says, "I haven't..." Okay. So, Mordechai says, "Al tadami ben avsheich limoed beis ha-melech mikol ha-yudim." These are the first words of Mordechai to Esther. Don't think, don't imagine that there's going to be this Gzeira and you're going to live. Because you're right, you're taking a chance. But don't believe that this you'll survive and the Jews won't. Because if you're going to be silent, there's going to be a Hatzalah from another place. And the truth is that God will punish you. Atu beis avich tavedim. And that might be me too. But we're going to be forgotten. U'miyodeya ma'is kazosi gato amachos. This is the whole reason why perhaps God arranged things for you to be taken and for you to be in this place. So, of course, Esther makes her proclamation, and she says, again, everybody, of course, needs to fast, not to eat or drink for 3 days. Got me menorah soyot, okay? But here's the part where Chazal tell us again about the triangle. U'mchein ovo ha-melech asher lo kados, v'kasher avadeti, avodeti. Okay. What was she trying to say there? We know she's already told us that she's taking her life in her hand. She says, "I'll do it." But okay, I have to die, I'll die. Right? Kasher avadeti avadeti. Why is that necessary for us to hear?
She's talking about she's going Baratzen, so her thing with Mordechai.
Okay, good. So Chazal say that it isn't just her trying to say, I'm going to die. Chazal, these words are crucial because they have a relationship. And Kasher Avadati, in other words, when I go now, I'm going to be lost from my family, lost Avadati, I'm going to be lost from you. In other words, now, as Chaim David said, Rashi quotes it on the Pasuk, that the same way, right, you can see Rashi on the Pasuk right there.
Because she isn't being called. Because
she isn't being called, she's doing it herself. So as you can see from the Rashi right there, and this is, Rashi is based on the Chazal, and I'm going to show it to you larger a little bit. Let's do one more time. Again, when you're not feeling well, you work very slow, and I'm sorry. But let's, I keep on doing the same thing over again. I want to show you the Rashi. Kasher avarti avarti, kasher salachti leilach li'ibu reilach l'moves, that's the Pashup Shat. Medr shagoda, kasher avarti mbeis abba, ovid mimcha. Shemeyachshav shani berotso nevalti l'goi, ani asur l'cha. Even though I'm trying to save the Jewish people, I'm trying to set Achashverosh up, and that's what I'm trying to do, and I'm doing it for the sake of Klal Yisrael, but at the end of the day, that's called willfully. And since it's willful submission to sexual relations outside of the marriage I have with you, we're going to be, from this point on, I am usher to you. So that's Chazal are telling us. And she does that. And Chazal, the Navi isn't graphic in its description, but according to Chazal, we can assume that that was the end of the relationship. She went in to Achashverosh, and again, the Pasuk describes it in very clean terms. He just extends the Sharvet Azov, but clearly, Chazal are seeing another story. Chazal are seeing that came on the heels of a sexual encounter. Achashverosh's good mood to say, what do you want, Esther? I'm willing, I'll give you what took half of the kingdom. That came because she submitted herself. And that submission, of course, severed her connection to Mordechai that she can never go back. That's Chazal's backstory. Now, what do we gain from that? If anything, it sounds a little bit, and some of you are looking away. I'm looking around the room. Some of you are uncomfortable with this. But I'm not making it up. This is not Kivalevich's Peyton Place version of Megillas Esther. This is Chazal's version of Megillas Esther based on looking at the Pesukim. That's another aspect of the story. They're enriching and deepening the story. What were Chazal after here? Because it would seem that maybe this is, okay, a lot of times, especially when I'm feeling well, I'll say things off the cuff, but I'll tell you that I'm very close to Talmidim and Rav Moshe Feinstein. I grew up with Rav Nota Greenblatt and Rav Ephraim Greenblatt as my teacher for 5 years. Both of these men, I grew up in Little Memphis, Tennessee, but I was hearing about Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he, of course, was named after Moshe Rabbeinu because he was born on Zion Odom. Those of you that remember the year of his death might remember that we all were scared on Zion Odom because we knew that was the tzaddik and the poisek ador. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mamalish, they say, Mishal Tzadikim. Do you remember what it was like? We all were scared on Zion Adar. We davened so hard because we figured if Moshe Feinstein could live through that Zion Adar, it was in 1985, right? 1985. It was 85 or 86? It was 86. If Moshe Feinstein would live past that Zion Adar, he'd definitely get another year because HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be Mamalish and Yisuf. And he, unfortunately, for the door that has been so quiet till now, so small, so insignificant since his passing, he died 6 days later on Tainus Esther that year. And Baruch Hashem, the schools that I've taught in, I arranged on Tainus Esther appreciation of Moshe Feinstein Day, because it's a day of Bittul Torah in a lot of places, a day to hear about the greatness of Moshe. Zion Adar was his birthday, and he was Nifter on Tainus Esther.
It's a Bittul Torah day?
It's a half a day.
On the 13th of Adar, many times people are fasting. On Yud Gimel Adar. And many of the schools that I've worked in, Yanki, I pushed that we should bring in students of Rav Moshe to tell the Talmidim who Rav Moshe Feinstein was. We should maybe try to do that here too. But the point is that my Rebbeim were students of Rav Moshe. And true, Rabbi Kupko, I eventually became a student of. But growing up, I always heard from the students of Ramesha. And they told me that one of the volumes, that the volume Dalid of Or Chaim, which has a lot of these type of questions, which was under the editorship of Mati Temler, Mordechai Temler, probably they should have edited out many of those Jews there. Not everything. This is what the Talmidim of Ramesha told me. Forget about the fact that some of the later tshuvas are suspect in their eyes, that maybe they aren't exactly from Ramesha. I'll talk about that in a different shir. But they told me not everything that's true needs to be printed. Not every tshuva from a gong needs to be to see the light of day. There are certain things that might be true in Kabbalah, but that doesn't mean you're mafaris in that. You have to weigh. So I'm going to ask again here. This might be true, what we're saying about the triangle between Mordechai, Esther, and Achashverosh. And Chazal might have known that to be true. But what did they gain, the average reader? It might have been something left better unsaid. Right? It definitely would make, right? What, clearly there's a depth here that we're missing. So, I turn, in this sense, to the Maral and the Zohar. The Zohar says, and I want to show you the Zohar, which is even more strange. Let me find the Zohar, please. The Zohar says that the triangle was accomplished because it really wasn't Esther. I mentioned this to Yossi last week. Yossi was just like, I'm sure you don't want to talk about this, but I wasn't feeling it, but okay, but I think it's still worthwhile. Here's the Zohar, quoted by the Chidor. The Zohar is in Rei Mehemna. It's the Rei Mehemna, okay. Let me tell you what the Zohar is a little bit. But the Rei Mehemna is the part of the Zohar that explains the mitzvahs in a mystical way. If you look in the Zohar Kodesh, you'll see there's two parts. There's the regular Biurim on the Psukim, and then there's Biurim on the mitzvahs. So the same way, you could actually just take the Rei Mehemna, which is the Nemon friend. Rei is the shepherd. The shepherd that is a true shepherd through the mitzvahs. So it says in the Rei Nehemna, V'yov lo sheda ba'asra, that basically since Esther had the Shekhinah within her, the Shekhinah was in Esther. The Shekhinah, we talked about Eishes Chayil before. Esther was an embodiment of the idea of Shekhinah. She had the Shekhinah within her. And therefore, V'yov lo sheda ba'asra, she actually sent a ghost, a demon image of her, in her place. V'yishadris he b'droya de Mordechai. And then she went back to Mordechai. So the Zohar is telling us that it wasn't that Esther herself went from both, but she was able to, and Mordechai, how did she do this? Mordechai helped her. Mordechai davi yoda shema mefayrish v'shivim loshayim ovid kol dobechach mosa. Mordechai helped create this shade. Mordechai helped create this demonic
A demonic, what's it called again?
A doppelganger? A doppelganger of Esther, right? This homunculus, what's it, homunculus? Eric was here, he would be able to help me with this. Homunculus, this image that walked like a human being, acted like a human being, the clone that did everything like a human being. But then therefore, why couldn't Esther just send the clone in when it was time to get Achashverosh on her side for the sake of the Jews? So the Zohar says because the clone couldn't talk like Esther. The clone, the demonic aspect of her, wasn't able to speak like Esther. And since the clone could definitely do, could be involved physically like Esther, could mimic Esther's unique physical traits, but she was, that clone was not able to speak like Esther. Therefore, it has to be Esther herself that goes this time.
Probably not at all, because
on the golem,
the call
Hadibor, we have the X-Files. Did somebody just have the X-Files come up? Right, did somebody just press the X-Files? It definitely sounds like something from the X-Files, but it's in the Zohar. Right, what do you want to say? What did you say, Mark?
In general, the call Hadibor only comes for somebody with an Neshama.
Ah, very good. In other words, the Koyach Hadibor, which was especially the Dibor of Esther. Now, the Arizal actually deepens this idea. Take a look. The Chidor quotes the Ari. Da Hasheda Hazu Hoya Hara Shebo.
So who was this still there?
What?
Excuse me?
So who was this Tumah?
So up until now, the Zohar says there was a Sheda. In other words, she created, Mordechai and her created this Sheda.
That's the Arizal.
No, no, that's the Zohar. The Arizal explains that the Zohar, usually the Arizal takes the Zohar into the stratosphere. Here, the Arizal actually takes the Zohar down here. Normally, the Arizal, the Gili of the Yitzchak Luria, gives us Kabbalah that we don't. You can learn the Zohar, and you can get the Sansina, bad translation, and think you know it. And the Arizal takes us levels beyond. Here, what the Arizal does is say that no, they didn't create this demon. That was part of Esther. Hoyahara Shabo. That was a Ra that was in Esther. Hoyahbakuach, the Kochmas Mordechai, the Esther, La Frida. She was able to actually separate that part of herself. Now, this is already something different now. We know that Megillas Esther is the sefer that's never going to be bought, right? And Rabbi Pupko, who I mentioned in length before, explained, the reason is because we get to understand God in a way that's completely different than any other way. The other holidays, the way we understand God is through miraculous intervention. That's obvious. Well, we're expecting another great miraculous intervention, which will be the Geula Asiga. In that time, those Yom Tov, the Gemara tells us, will pale in comparison. Why will they pale? I don't know if there's going to be splitting of the sea. I don't know if there's going to be 10 plagues. But the idea of God running the world and setting us as central in that narrative, and that everything has been to bring God's glory into the world, will be so clear that the other miracles of speaking to us at Sinai, taking us out of Mitzrayim, taking care of a people for 40 years, is going to be just more of the same. And therefore, it's almost like, as Rabbi Pupko gave the moshul, you have a bunch of people that are stuck, and this is from Rabbi Pupko, you have a bunch of people that are stuck in a room, and it's dark. Imagine that it would become, imagine we were total strangers in this room. And what happened was, is that it was completely dark, and we never got a chance to know each other. And it was so dark, these shades were down, terrible darkness. Now, what can we do? Well, one thing we can do is get to know each other. We separate a little bit from each other, and we talk. And David says, my name is David Ellis. He has a certain type of voice, and we get to know him. Mayor says, oh, I'm the mayor. And he says a certain type of voice. Yankee says, and even though we don't see each other, we get to know each other by their voices and by even the grunts that they might make, by a certain tone. And in a way, that's a way to know them. Of course, we could do something else, which is we get Jeff Blank, and we get to find the switch that's off, and we turn the lights on, and now we see everybody. The problem is, as Rav Huttner and Rabbi Pupko explained, that when we do that, we could have just waited a couple of hours. When the sun comes up, true, Jeff Blank gave us some light, but that's nothing compared to the natural sunlight that would envelop us. When that natural sunlight envelops us, what happens is that we see each other even much clearer than we saw each other even when that light was on. But listen, but let's say we don't turn the light on. We get to know each other in an intimate, interesting way that's essential even after the lights come on, even after the geula, where we're all going to know that everything was God's plan. There's going to be an intimate knowledge of God that we had and of each other that was established. That's the idea of why the mess is never, why Purim is still significant. And therefore, this is significant for us because Esther, Mordechai represent us. They represent the ability for us to function in a world that's sometimes very anti our morals and our ideals. A world yet that we have to be part of. A world that we need to intersect with and bond with and sometimes become one with. Now, if we are not able to realize how to do this, we have to realize that Ra developed within us as well. Amalek, really, as the Vilna Gaon tells us, was able, just like a microbe, to get into our system. And Amalek is within us. We still have that aspect of Ra within us. And the fact that Esther was able, through Mordechai's help, to together separate that and compartmentalize yourself. So in a way, she was still living in her mind, essentially, with Mordechai. The Maral explains that it says she was Yosheves Becheiko, but it could have been mentally. She knew she was still with Mordechai. She knew it was crucial for us to see that Esther really has both aspects. She has the internal, complete, holy, pure Jewish woman, who is the ideal of Jewish womanhood. Mordechai and Esther as this incredible team, and that's where her mind is in many ways. On the other hand, she is also, it was necessary, because of the forced situation that was replicated in our history. The force, the ones of Esther being taken is the arch of Titus, of those images of Golas that have occurred with us. The idea of how the Jewish people have been expelled, the idea of how the Jewish people have been trampled and taken and lived like Maranos, all of that is really the mushroom of Esther being taken. And the same way, we didn't disappear, but we actually became Nobel Prize winners and we became advisors and economists. In the same way, we have been essential for the fruition and growth of that greater culture, the same way, in the way, almost what kept that culture going. And yet, what we needed to realize is that we have to have both aspects. We have to be ba'om ne'ito. We sometimes have to be able to recognize that Ra, that's part of us, will find an affinity. Up until the time that we come to Yemei HaMashiach, we won't be able to destroy that. But that affinity is there, and yet there's a purity, the purity of speech, and the purity of what we're about, that comes from our internal strength. So in a way, that's really the metaphor, I believe, for Mordechai and Esther and Achashverosh. And that's why Chazal, in a way, are forcing us to think deeply about the significance of the book. They're making it, see, again, Esther represents Shechina, Esther represents Esh HaChayil. Esther's first words in the Megillah are kol, everything. She represents the idea of the inner dwelling of God. I'll finish with one vart from the Shlo HaKodesh. The Shlo HaKodesh says that, it's not happenstance that we read the parsha of Ashros HaShchina of the Mishkan during Purim time. Every single year, except when it's an Ibrior, we basically read about Ashros HaShchina, about the Mishkan. Strange. People have a hard time connecting the Purim story with the details of how you make the Kalim or the Begadim to Beis HaMikdash, right? It seems. However, the Shlo says we need to focus in such a way. Chidush HaRim tried to explain this a little bit deeper. He said even the name Adar is about Dira. It's about Dira B'tachtoina. It's about how Aleph is Dor. The Alufu Sho'oilo, the Aleph of Adar, how it's Dor within us. And that means not just in Eretz Yisrael or Pitahara, the Kedusha, but it means how we have God's presence within us despite everything else around us. And that's, in a way, the message of Purim, the message of how we have a Netzach. And that relationship is going to be, at the end, something that was worthwhile. It's something just like when we were in the room and we recognized each other. It was a unique, human, specific perspective that only happens because of the Torah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.